Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
The weeks sure do fly by. Yes, it's another Best in the World with Richard Parr, where I have the pleasure of interviewing world champions, Olympic champions, world record holders and world number ones to find out what they do differently from the average Joe, from you and me, what they do to become the very best in their field. And I'm delighted to say that this week's guest is from the world of fencing, our first fencer on the show. It's Matteo Taglieriol. I had to practice that name before I spoke to Matteo, but he assures me that's how you say it. And it's a really fun chat with the Italian. He won gold at the 2008 Beijing Olympics, and we discuss all types of things, including why he doesn't have any role models, why he set his goals from an early age, and also why he collects owls. Yes, you heard me right. Why he collects owls. It's a fun chat with Matteo. He's really open and he's an interesting guy. And we get an insight into how he prepares for his major competitions, both from a mental perspective and also from a physical perspective. And I think one of the things which is really nice about this podcast is very often I ask these world champions, Olympic champions, the moment when they won their medal, the moment when they knew that they were the best in the world. And very often you get quite a similar response of just relief or excitement. But the way Matteo puts it is really beautiful. So listen out to that on today's podcast. It's a fun chat with Matteo Taglieriol, the Italian fencing Olympic champion. All right, just before we get to that interview, I want to tell you that today's show is brought to you by Sportacino. It is my other breakfast show on Facebook Live, Periscope, and on YouTube. If you could do one thing, please like the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Sportacino. We discuss all things related to sports, health, fitness, travel, you name it, we've got it. And we're live every single weekday morning from 8 GMT. So please go and like that Facebook page. All right, let's get to my interview with the Olympic fencing champion, Matteo Taglieriol.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Matteo Taglieriol, welcome to The Best in the World with Richard Parr, an Olympic gold medalist in fencing. So great to have you on the show. Let's start from the very beginning, Matteo. How did you first get into fencing?
Hi, thanks for welcoming me. I started fencing when I was six. And since I was three, I don't know, I was a bit strange because I had this like love for blades, like knives and swords. So my mom started reading me stories about the musketeers and stuff like that. So I was really into it. And when I was six, I made a mistake on the TV because I was supposed to watch cartoon, and I switched to the wrong channel, and there was a fencing competition, and you know, I fell in love, and fortunately, my grandpa knew the coach of my hometown, which was Treviso. So the day after I started, and apparently I don't remember, but my coach told my parents that I was quite good. When I was a kid, the only thing that I remember is that I always, you know, I started sports when I was two. Because I was a bit of a mess of a kid, you know, I was like moving a lot. I think I had like an ADD or something like that. So I was like always trying, you know, the only way to sleep for me was like being really, really tired. So I was doing like two or three sports at a time. But I was really, I'm a person that it's gets bored really easily. So I tried ski, I tried swimming, I tried soccer, basketball, like everything from 2 to 6. And then my only love was fencing.
Oh, great. Which was your favorite musketeer?
D'Artagnan, the fourth one.
I remember growing up as a kid watching the Four Musketeers, but they were like dogs. I think we called them the Musca Hounds or something.
Yeah, there was a lot of cartoons, yeah.
A lot of cartoons like that. Well, it looks like it was a fortunate changing of the TV channel there.
Yeah, yeah, I always said that, you know, it was luck. It was luck.
So, when did you realize that you were very good at this sport? When did you realize that this is something you wanted to try and become an Olympic champion at?
Well, quite early, because I'm also really competitive. So, you know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be better than the others, basically in everything. But since from 6 to 9 or 10 years old, I was, you know, willing to be the best of my fencing gym, which I was actually becoming slowly. Then when I was 10, I realized, I you know, looked at what was the maximum goal to reach, and it was Olympics. So when I was 10, I said to my mom and dad, I said, "Oh, Dad, Mom, I want to win Olympics." And my parents said, "Actually, yeah, okay, it's okay." But, you know, they thought that I was kidding. And I was actually, I mean, serious as a 10 years old. But when I was 10, it was when my dream started growing inside of me. And the actual moment when I started working on that dream, it was when I was like 14.
On this podcast, we talk a lot about setting goals, because that's a lot of what some of these Olympic and world champions do. Like, they set 6 months goals, 1 year goal, long term goals. In a weird way, when you said that at the age of 10, when you said to your parents, "I want to become an Olympic champion," because you had said it, did that almost force you to work towards that goal because you said it out loud? Do you think it helped in a way?
Yeah, I really believe in setting goals, and I really believe in selling to yourself what you want to do. Like, I think that every human being can do whatever they want if they only really want it, because I experienced it myself. I mean, I believe in talent, but I believe way more in work and in hard work and in, you know, programming what you have to do. When I was 10, actually, it was, you know, only on my mind, and I was just kind of like dreaming about it. But I told you, when I was 13, 14, I started working, because it was the first moment where I started saying no at my life. I mean, and my life that it was not school or fencing, in order to succeed. So I started, you know, not going to movies with my friends or trips, or, I mean, not all the time, you know, I actually did, but it was the first time when I started saying no, when I started, you know, going running a little more. Or if you ask all of my friends, they can all tell you that I was really focused since I was a kid. You know, they were kind of like not really impressed when I won Olympics, because they were like, "You started thinking about it like 15 years ago." And I always told everyone, but I think mostly to myself, that I was going to win.
Wow, that's an amazing sense of belief. And during that time, when you had now decided that you were really going to go for the Olympics, who were the people you looked up to? Who were the role models? Who were the people you try and learn from to try and reach that goal?
Well, you know, this sounds a little maybe arrogant, but so since I was a kid, I never had a role model. Or I mean, I know that I can learn from everyone, which is something that I still do. But I always try to pick something that I like from someone and try to see if I can fit it into myself. But I always wanted to be a role model for other people, but I thought that having a role model, it was, you know, kind of like a limit, you know, because it was like, oh, this person is like a myth, and a myth is something that you don't reach, in my mind. So I never had a real myth, not in sports, not in life, but I always appreciate when someone does something good or something helpful, which this someone can be, you know, Michael Jordan or can be my neighbor. You know, you can learn from everyone. My dad was always used to tell me since I was a kid, he was saying, I tried to translate from Italian, but he was saying something like, steal with your eyes, you know, like look and try to reproduce. Like from everyone can teach you something and there's nothing that you cannot do. And I really believe in this.
Amazing. So tell us about when you first actually got to the Olympics. How was that experience?
So the way that I speak about Olympics, it's always the same. So I would say for me, Olympics, it was like Disneyland. Like it's the same feeling. You know, I'm a big fan of theme park, and actually I'm a big fan of Disneyland. And so when I went, it's the same feeling that a kid, like eight years old kid, feels when first goes to Disneyland. And so Olympics gave me something, you know, I was focused on winning for like 15 years. And when I arrived to Beijing, it was the first moment where I called my parents home and told them, I mean, I'm here for winning, but I don't care about winning anymore. Like, I'm happy being here. Because I never, you know, I always thought about winning. But then the moment I arrived there, I think, the Olympic spirits. And I just started smiling like every day. Like, I was really happy just of being there. Because it's a place, you know, like, there's a really positive energy and vibration there. And you can meet athletes and, you know, everyone is kind to you. And I mean, I've been to Beijing, which they were like, I think one of the most amazing for organization Olympics of like the past 50 years. I mean, that's what they told me. I don't know because I haven't been to the previous one, but everything was so great and so positive that I think that you cannot be sad at Olympics.
Because of that, do you think it made you relax more? Did it almost take away a bit of the pressure?
Yeah, definitely. Two things. The first one is that I knew that I was perfectly prepared. And, you know, before leaving for Olympics, I was tense but relaxed. I mean, tense because, you know, I was about to you know, have the chance of my life, but I was really relaxed because I made like a big amount of work, I think even a little more than what I was supposed to. And I knew that my body, my mind and everything could not do more than that. So I said, this is me. I cannot do more than this. And that made me relax a lot. But also, yeah, the feeling of being there. In fact, the day of the competition, I can never forget. I think I was the only one. An Olympic competition of fencing is like 50 people. Normally, we are like 300 a competition. But in Olympics, they're, you know, the best 50. Like, it's a really, really hard competition. Even the first match is really hard. But 50, you can see everyone in the face. It's not like 300. And trust me, I was the only one who was smiling in the morning. not after the competition, but in the morning, I was, you know, I woke up and I saw my roommate, because we were roommates, you know, he was like wild, but like normal, you know, like the day of Olympics, you're supposed to be like him, not like me. But I was smiling, you know, like I was not going to do that. And I think that, yeah, that made me not win, but starting with like one or two touches above the others.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
More from Matteo in just a moment, but I want to say that today's show is also brought to you by Audible. They are one of the leading suppliers of audiobooks in the world. Over 180,000 titles to choose from. I'm currently listening to Zlatan Ibrahimovic's autobiography. Really good listen there. And, you know, you can listen to these books wherever you are. You know, you can be in the gym, you can be in the car, you can be in the bus, you can be walking to work, you can be absolutely anywhere, maybe just in your room chilling, resting before another busy day, because you can certainly learn from these audiobooks. And you know what? The kind people at Audible are offering you a free trial of their service for 30 days, and that includes a free download. So I'd highly recommend you do it just for the free download. Perhaps you could get Zlatan's book as well. All you've got to do is go to audibletrial.com/best. That will, of course, help our show. So you'd be helping our show as well as helping yourself. That code again is audibletrial.com/best. All right, let's return to the conversation with Matteo Taglieriol.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
So you said you were pleased with how you prepared for the games. Let's talk about your training days, particularly leading up to the Olympics. What would be a typical day in your life, Matteo?
Well, fencing, it's a sport that you have to basically do every day. Every day means like 5 or 6 times a week you have to work with your sword. Like, you have to do technique every day. So I work like 3 hours at least a day on tactics or with sparrings and with my coach. And we sometimes we look at videos before the match and then try to work on, you know, particular things. But and normally this is on the afternoon, and in the morning I do a part of strength, like with weights, and which is like depends on the periods of the year. It goes from like four times a week to 2 times a week when I'm close to a competition. And also, I work with my natural body weight and on like speed on foot. Like, I think I work like every normal athlete, like a part on physical and the part on technique. And normally, when I'm far from competition, my work is a little more on quantity, and when I'm close to competition, I work a little more on quality.
Okay.
And yeah, that's it. But I believe a lot in other 2 things. One is nutrition, and the other one is mind. I think actually is in the wrong order, like first mind and then nutrition. I think that with the correct state of mind, you can do more than you expect, actually.
Let's get into detail on both of those points. Let's talk about the mind first. What is a good state of mind for you, and how can you get there?
The good state of mind, it's when I see like the green fields. So my idea is to like not think about, like if you think too much during a competition, you're slower than the others. So I have a mental coach since like, I don't know, like 6-7 years, I don't know.
Four, 6-7 years or since you were 6 or 7?
No. I started working. I tried to work with some mental coach even before Olympics.
Okay.
But I was a little rough kid. You know, I was not really happy to make other people help me for real. Like I was I knew that I had to work on my mind, but I didn't find the right person. Then since 2011, actually, I started working with this mental coach, and I saw the difference. I think I saw the difference also because I was a little older and a little bit experienced. And it was a moment that for me was not really good. And with working, knowing what to do with my mind made the difference. Now I work like once a week. I mean, always depends on needs. Like sometimes I work even 4 times a week. But yeah, so I really believe in the power of the mind. Before Olympics, I was trying to, you know, read, document myself, doing it alone or reading like even books about psychology and stuff. I think it helped me a little bit, but actual technique, it's a little better, like if you work with a professionist. You know, the work with my mind helped me in the past years because, you know, I went into a really bad injury before London, which has led to like a really dark moment in my life because, you know, I went from number 4 in the world at the time and a possible medal in London Olympics to basically 3 years of injury because first has been made a mistake, then I made a mistake because I wanted to come back earlier, then I had to do like 2 surgeries and I thought that I could not continue fencing anymore. So for me, it was like, it's like dying. And you know, the work with my mind helped me where my body could not.
Mm. No, that's amazing. And let's talk about the nutrition. What kind of things were you eating?
So I started, I come from a really fit family. My family is really sporty and my mom particularly. So she always like controlled our nutrition since I was a kid. But then as an athlete, I started years ago with the Zone diet.
Okay.
Which at the time it was, you know, one of the best. And before Olympics, I did the Zone. And after that, I tried other diets, but I was not really into them. So then I went to a nutritionist and basically now I have a diet which is like tailor-made on myself, which is similar to the Zone, but with some difference based on the periods of the year and the training. And also, it depends on how much do I train and I know what to eat.
For those who don't necessarily know what the Zone diet is, Mateo, could you just tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. To make it really simple, I try to eat fish and meat as like in every meal of the day. Like it's like five meals a day, like three main and two snacks, which you always have to stay in a particular zone with your level of the body, which you achieve by eating 40% of carbs, 30% of fat, and 30% of protein. Of course, the protein that you have to choose are like fish or meat, it's suggested. Mm-hmm. And the carbs are mainly like vegetables and fruits, and less pasta, bread, and sugars. And even the fats, it's better like if you eat nuts and olive oil than other kind of fats. So it's like quite simple. You have to remember in the beginning, you have to weigh your food, but then after a while, you just look and you know how much you have to eat. And you actually eat a lot, which is the reason why I started doing that, because I was, you know, I never been fat. I always wanted a diet, like a controlled way of eating that helped me through my training, because otherwise I was eating a lot, but I was always feeling tired. Mm. After the zone, basically, I was eating more and I was not feeling tired, so it was working.
Oh, that's great. Were there any foods you missed you really wish you could have been eating but weren't eating?
So the thing that was really strange, it was that I never been a great fan of cakes or sweets, but I started becoming with the zone. So, you know, you always have a free meal a week, basically. And in that free meal, I was eating like normal because I was actually enjoying the diet. So I was not missing anything. The only thing that I was missing was like chocolate. And so in my free day, I was like actually eating these cakes or pancakes or stuff like that, which is strange because I was not really eating before I started the diet. It's, I think it's something changes inside of me and I wanted to eat chocolate.
So let's talk about a typical match day, a typical day of when you're competing. What would that be like? Did you have any rituals or any superstitions that you do before competing?
So I had to cut superstition because it was starting to become too much. So when I was a kid, I was really believing that if I was fencing with the same pair of socks or doing the same things every day, I was going to win. And the problem is that mostly when I was a kid, I was constantly winning, so my superstition were growing, and I was never cutting my hair till I was winning, and I was never, you know, I was always doing a lot of this stuff, and I was really believing in that. Then one day, I think growing up, I realized that superstition sometimes are good, sometimes are bad, so I tried to cut. It was really hard for me because, you know, I mean, it was stupid at the same time because I believe that I'm not that I'm good enough not to have superstition, but at the same time I was doing that for long. Now I don't have a real superstition. I believe a lot in here and now. Like I try to realize what's happening at the moment and find solution. So it's not a superstition, but it's more like a mantra. Like I repeat myself like here now. Mm. And except for that, I have some rituals like I have to, I don't know, like shave the day before the competition. I always take a bath. Like I have to arrive to the competition like really clean. I think that cleaning my body and my clothes is like, I think, cleaning my mind. Hmm. And so I always do that before, and I need to stay calm before the competition. And then I normally wake up like 2 hours before starting fencing. and have a breakfast that depends on where I am. But, you know, I try to eat a little more because during competition, I eat, but you cannot eat a lot because also, I mean, I normally would not eat because tension doesn't make me eat.
Oh, wow.
But I do because I have to.
Yeah.
But I eat like gels and I drink, but I don't really eat solid during competition, or I just have some bites or on biscuits or stuff because I don't feel tension, but I realize that I'm really tense because normally I'm a person that is like hungry all day. So and during competition I'm not. And I have a little owl. I have a little owl that my grandma gave me like when I was a kid, and the owl travels with me. I mean, it's a fake owl, of course.
I was gonna say I've seen falcons on planes from the Middle East, but I've never seen an Italian fencer sat on a plane with an owl before.
No, I collect owls. I collect owls because I don't know why. Because they told me that they help you with bad. They take bad things far from you. I don't know. It's like tradition.
So how many have you got?
Oh, I really don't know. More than 100 for sure, because everyone knows now, and they gave me like I buy them when I travel, or I have a lot, but only one travels with me. It's really small.
And other than that one, what's the favorite one you've been able to buy or pick up from somewhere in the world?
Thinking, you know, I don't really have. I mean, I have one that I bought in Poland, which is really big, and it's made of wood. Actually, my dad gave me. Oh. My dad gave me in 2001, the day before. So I went to this junior world championship, and the individual competition went quite bad. And there was still the team competition. And my dad he came there, and he saw that I was really sad. And he went to, the town center, and he came back with like this really big owl, like, because he said to me, you had really bad luck, so I could not buy you a small one. So I'm giving you this one that is really big. And then we won the world championship. So,
so in some ways that was a lucky owl perhaps.
Yeah. And my dad, which is really superstitious, he started buying me owls for like a long time the day before the competition. Because the problem is my dad, he is really superstitious a lot. He says that it's not, but he is.
And
Italian.
Let's go back to 2008 then. Let's talk about the moment when you won the final, when you became the Olympic gold medalist. Do you remember it well at all? And do you remember how exactly you felt?
Yeah, I do remember. I mean, I realized, I think, like 6 months after. But I remember, I won 59 my final, but it was like really, really fast because I knew that my opponent, he was supposed to win. You know, like everyone thought that the final was between me and him because I won like three competition of World Cup during that year, and he was actually really strong. And even if he was not the more winning of the year, everyone thought that he was going to win. I started really well, and then I knew that I had to like go as much as fast as I can because I wanted like to I didn't want him to breathe. I really wanted to finish as fast as I can because I knew that I was really prepared, and I tried to you know, surf the moment. And so I remember the two hits before the two hits before the end, I thought, like, I won, because I knew that I was going to win. And but it just crossed my mind, and then another voice said, like, no, keep going. You know, you never know. Like, keep going. So then I hit him two times, and I won. The moment I won, so before I was like seeing, like, everything was really fast, like, you know, like lights and people screaming and my opponent, and it was like a circus in my mind. And the moment I made the last touch, like, I felt like I was alone in that place, you know, like, there was, I don't know how many people, but a lot, mostly for a fencing competition. And I started, like, it's like everything was shutting down, like lights, and, you know, I thought that I was going to explode, and I actually imploded.
Wow.
And I fell, but in a positive way, you know, like, not, it was not a bad feeling at all, but I felt like I was under the water.
Wow.
And it was really strange. And it lasted for, you know, like 40 seconds, a minute, but it was a lot, you know, like, that feeling. And then at a certain point, I started screaming, you know, we normally scream after, for tension and stuff. But still, even so, when I started screaming, I came back from that place where I was. but still, I didn't really realize what I've done for about, I think, 6 months. So I came back and I went on vacation with my ex-girlfriend at the time. And she was complaining because I was, like, sleeping all day and all night. Like, I slept for, like, a week. I was, you know, like, it was something that it was so great and so wonderful. And, you know, 15 years of work in my mind to achieve that moment. That after that, like, I started a new chapter of my life, but I had to realize that. So it took me a while.
Mm. And then you mentioned the disappointment of being injured before the 2012 London Olympics. You couldn't defend your title there. What are your goals right now, Matteo?
Yeah. You know, I could not tell you that I was going to win, but I really thought that I was going to win a medal in that Olympics. So that's why I was really disappointed, because my season was going really well. My goals now, it's, you know, it's to go to Tokyo and win again, because it took me a while to decide if I wanted to continue or not. I mean, I'm 34. Fencing, sometimes now they go on till 40. I just did 34 in January, and I want to, you know, when if everything goes well, I will be 37 in Tokyo. And this year, the one that arrived second, it was like 39 or 40 years old, something like that. So I spent almost 3 years going back and forth from injury, but I didn't really work too much. So my body is still young and I'm in a really good shape. And this year I started really well, and I just won with my team the Champions League of fencing.
Oh, fantastic.
And I did some Italian competition really good. I did two World Cup that are going good, but I didn't have results. But now I'm going to Vancouver next week for the World Cup of fencing. And I hopefully I want to go on the podiums. But my goals are to go to the World Championship this year. So have this comeback, and I want to go back to the, you know, national team and start competing at high level, and my long-term goal is to win Olympics again, because I saw, and in history of épée, which is the weapon I do, only one person won Olympics twice, and it's like in 1929 or something like that. So I want to at least be like that person. My original goal was to win three times, but I don't know. I'm going to think about it after.
Yeah, that would be 41. But I guess it all goes back to what you were saying, Matteo, about not having role models. And I guess it's breaking what people have done before. So if you win that third and you win it at 41, you're doing something that no one's done before. So I certainly wouldn't put it past
that's
you.
That's what I always wanted to do, you know. I always wanted to be the only one. Unfortunately, because of injury and stuff, I haven't been yet. But you know what I've seen. I see that, you know, still there's a lot of people in fencing that takes me as a role model for my style, for also my training, for the fact that I'm a really hard worker, and they saw that what, you know, when I was a kid, that I was a little, you know, maybe cocky, a little arrogant. But now they saw that what I was just telling everyone what I was going to do. And now they take me as a model, as a role model. But mostly, and that's what makes me more happy, is when they take me as a role model for the way I train and for the how can I say, for how professional I am in what I do, which is not being, you know, make some jokes when I'm fencing, which is something that I still like to do. You know, like I do some mind games sometimes with my opponent because, you know, we actually fight. It's similar to box. It's similar to, you know, you see your opponent in the face. It's not a battle against time. So I like to play a little bit, even with mind tricks. But behind that, there's a lot of hard work, and that's the heritage I want to leave. You know, like if you want to win, you have to work. It's not about talent and it's not about anything else. It's just hard work and focus and really believing, like, you can become whatever you believe.
And I also think if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will believe in you. So
Yeah.
Matteo, it's been really good to talk to you today. Just before we go, could you tell us how we can continue to follow your journey on social media, please?
Yeah. I have a Facebook page, which is my name and my surname. So Matteo Tagliariol official. It's really easy to find. It's the only one with the blue tick. And then I have an Instagram account, which is Mattoman, which is like Superman, but with M-A-T-T-O.
Oh, great.
Which means crazy, because my mom was calling me crazy when I was a kid. She was playing with my name. You know, my name is Matteo. She was taking away the E. And Matto in Italian means crazy. So I kept that nickname.
Oh, good stuff. Well, it's been so good to talk to you today, Matteo. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And thank you for being the best in the world.
Thanks for having me.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Lovely to have Matteo there as our first fencer on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. And we've covered all different types of sports, from hockey with John Potter and Ellen Hoog. We've had paddleboarding with Damien Ryder. We've had snooker with Stephen Hendry. We've had rugby with Chester Williams. Oh, we've had so many amazing guests. We've had lots of swimmers, in fact, Nathan Adrian. And that brings me to next week's guest. We've got the fantastic Stephanie Rice. You may remember she won 3 Olympic gold medals at the 2008 Beijing Olympics, the same Olympics that Matteo attended. And I have a fantastic chat with her, really open, Really good girl. And that will be next Wednesday on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. And to make sure you never miss an episode, please go to iTunes and press that subscribe button so it automatically downloads every Wednesday. So you don't even have to think about it. You just turn your phone on and you listen and learn from the very best in the world. Also, if you get a moment while you're there, please give us a rating and review. That would really help our show. All right, I've been Richard Parr. You've been listening to Matteo Taglieriol, and I'll be back with you next Wednesday. Goodbye for now.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.